Next case is Cincinnati Bar Association versus Robert Sweeterman. Mr. Hafley.
Justice, and may it please the court. On November 8th in 2004, the court suspended the license of Mr. Sweeterman to practice law because he had been convicted for felony theft in the Common Police Court of Hamilton County. And here we are, it's 2.5 years later, he's still suspended. If the court accepts the board's recommendation, and given the time it takes to obtain reinstatement, the soonest that Mr. Sweeterman could get his license back if this court were to approve would be like 5.5 years, which is, so we're talking about if the board's recommendation is adopted, we're talking about a 5.5 year suspension. This is not to minimize the offenses which occurred, but I think the board ignored or really shortchanged Mr. Sweeterman and its interpretation of some of the mitigating factors. One of which is that he admitted from the outset what had occurred. A letter from the Bar Association got to his office and he wrote back and listed all of the clients that he had represented at the Phillips Law Firm, whether there was any problem or not. And he admitted in 8 instances that he had taken money that belonged to the Phillips Law Firm, and he said so. He used words like converted and misappropriated. He didn't try to gild the lily or talk his way out of that at all. Mr. Phillips and the Bar Association and OLAP got together and had an intervention, and on the recommendation of OLAP, and I believe they made the arrangements, in 2 days, Mr. Sweeterman was in in Houston.
Counsel, is your main objection that it ought to be something other than indefinite?
Yes, it is.
And what would that be?
Well, ideally, it would be, for example, 2-year suspension with full credit. I don't expect that, because that means he would be immediately eligible to apply for reinstatement. And in fact, the Bar Association mentions that point. They think that would be too light a sanction, but you can't ignore what's happened in the last 2.5 years like it didn't
right,
happen.
So what you said, that's ideally what
well, because then he could apply right now.
What middle ground are you proposing?
I think really that is a middle ground when you consider the 2.5 years he's already done, but certainly
that means he's back in automatically, right?
Well, something definite then, something that he can look to that's not so far in the future that he can get everything back.
But for this kind of activity, isn't the normal suspension and indefinite? And that means you don't automatically come back in.
That's correct.
That you have to show something. You have to convince the court that we need you back.
I'm hoping we've done that. This is a substantial amount of mitigation, and what really bothers me most about the board is how they, and in fact the Bar Association psychiatrists too, how they downplayed the seriousness of the mental and emotional illness. This went back to childhood, all the way back. It was acute depression and anxiety. And he went down to the manager for 30 days, and they prescribed 4 or 5 really high-powered medicines for depression, and even one called Risperdal, which is antipsychotic medication, and it's a medication that's used to treat schizophrenics and people with bipolar. Now, Mr. Sweeterman, fortunately, has neither one of those, but that shows how serious this was.
Mr. Sweeterman.
The Bar Association psychiatrist comes in and says, well, it's not that bad.
He's been taken out on an indefinite suspension, interim suspension for the conviction.
Since November.
Since November of when?
2004.
If we gave him still an indefinite suspension but credit for time served, would that also make him eligible to apply now?
I don't think so. I think he would have to wait at least another 6 months to have the 1 year. Well, no, that's not correct either. He'd have to apply. And the process takes a year. It's not an actual year.
But wouldn't that serve both goals? It would give your client credit for the time served, recognizing he's made substantial rehabilitative moves, but it would still allow us the ability to look at him afresh in the reapplication process, which he can begin immediately because he's been out the two some years.
Right, and I think we make the point that what he would present at that time is really no different than what we're presenting here. I mean, we've got the same mitigating factors and whatever. Certainly that would be an improvement. I'm not trying to minimize that. But
it would also send the message to the bar that we treat this conduct very seriously. It merits an indefinite suspension. I'm concerned if we do just a flat time out, it may send a difficult message to the bar when you compare other cases to it, that why did he get only a year? And they may not recognize the time has already been out. So if you do it an indefinite with credit for time served, it still sends that serious message of serious conduct deserving an indefinite.
Yes, it does. And I don't want to seem, I agree with that, with what you say, 100%. I don't want to seem greedy and saying, well, but we want more, like Oliver Twist. I want more. I always want a little more.
Because the board has recommended indefinite, but no time served.
Yes.
And so your time starts right now before you can even begin to apply.
Right. I think the board was extremely short-sighted in this, and I'm kind of really surprised at it. I didn't know what they were going to do, but basically it's how they said and what they said that, well, we believe the bar psychiatrist, there really wasn't. I mean, this is more than a man having a bad day or a bad week. This is severe mental illness and emotional illness, and he's got a handle on it. Because of OLAP, really, he's been, Ms. Kaznarich from OLAP came in to testify for him at the hearing and said his compliance has been 100% with the contract, and he is doing excellently. And I think that's continuing. It's still been very hard on him. There's certainly a financial burden that he has to pay in addition to all the restitution. His income has substantially decreased in that last 2.5 years. And I'm not saying it shouldn't have been. I mean, you don't suspend a lawyer's license and expect him to hop into a different occupation and make twice the money, obviously. But it has been a severe burden, not just on him, but on his wife and the three children, which again adds to his remorse. And the board did find genuine remorse, and that he is genuinely remorseful for what he did here. excuse me, there are certainly a lot other mitigating factors. He admitted, again, from the outset, everything. He cooperated fully. He pleaded guilty to an indictment. He didn't force the state to trial. Again, he made restitution, which was not inconsequential. The bar cites several cases in the brief about where indefinite suspensions were given, and then you look at the for basically theft, and you look at the amounts, 200,000, 100,000, and here we have about 10,000. They're both bad. Stealing is bad, however much you take. But I have to think that stealing $200,000 is a more serious matter than taking $10,000. And again, OLAP, he's still with OLAP, and he can continue, and the court can put conditions on him. If you would give him his license back now or make it automatic back, you can still put conditions. I would expect the court to insist on some continued psychiatric intervention. I would expect the court to insist on continued OLAP. Perhaps monitoring with the Bar Association to make sure how he's doing and what he's doing. These things are all possible no matter what the court does with respect to a suspension. But even if he can immediately apply, it's still going to take a year. Again, that's better than what he's looking at now. It's an improvement over what the board did. I think you gather, I'm not, by reading the brief more than this argument, I'm not real happy with the board. I think they did a probably not as good a job as I've seen.
Well, they didn't recommend a disbarment, though.
That's true. And they did acknowledge some things, some positive things.
But the presumptive sanction for an attorney who misappropriates money is disbarment.
That's correct.
And we have been fairly strong in that regard. So when the board's recommendation was less than disbarment, that was at least a recognition of some of the mitigation you've been speaking
about. Yes, it was. It was. And although I would hate to think, at least from my standpoint as his lawyer, that anything less than disbarment is a victory. It's not. But
in some cases, it is.
Yes, in some cases it is, but not this one, I don't think. Because, again, when you review the medical reports for manager, and this is someone that OLAP picked. I mean, he just said, I'm yours, do what you want, with me what you want. And they said, okay, go down to manager. Two psychiatrists and a psychologist. All these medications that Dr. Kennedy was, he was forced to admit that, yes, these prescriptions were made for him. And yes, there's our good doctors down at manager. And yes, they had to have a reason for prescribing these medicines. Yet he's got a therapist here who says he's doing fine. And Dr. Kennedy says, as far as the present time is concerned, he's fit to practice law right now.
This case was heard on a stipulation of the facts and evidence. Is that correct?
I'm sorry, Judge. The sound is bouncing around. I'm looking the wrong way.
This case was heard on the stipulation of the facts and evidence.
Yes.
Is that correct? And it was about a year ago when that commenced, in May of 2006?
Yes. I'd like to save whatever time I have left, if I have any left, before.
Thank you, Mr. Hapley.
Thank you.
Mr. DeChemius.
Good morning, Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court. I would like to begin where I was going to begin with the point that Justice O'Donnell made a minute or two ago, and that is that the presumptive sanction for this sort of thing, that is theft of client funds, is disbarment. We should be beginning with disbarment and working our way through mitigation, not starting with indefinite suspension, and then how can we mitigate, are there factors that would mitigate that? Before I go on, I would also, in response to Justice Cupp's question about stipulations and all heard on the record, accept that the Bar Association's medical expert witness, Dr. Kennedy, did testify live at the hearing. And so the board had the opportunity to hear him in person and ask questions and test his credibility. And I think the board, I think it can be seen from their determination that they place some reliance on him. But he was there live and did testify. In the respondent's brief on mitigation or on this sanction issue, the respondent paints the only victim here, if you will, as being John Phillips and the Phillips Law Firm. The respondent goes to great pains to point out that no, this isn't a theft of client funds. This is more like other cases that have come before the court, which involve attorneys embezzling money from their law firms. And I would submit to you that that is not the case here. These monies that the respondent converted to his own use were retainer monies that would have gone into the law firm's IOLTA account. They had not been earned by the law firm, and so they were still the client's money. And the record and the admitted counts here include also another instance where a court cost refund check came back and the respondent, instead of giving it to the client who was entitled to it, the respondent kept the money. That's an instance of a direct conversion of client money that is in the record. The record contains a number of other violations, in addition to the straight conversion of these monies. There are instances in here where clients were lied to about the status of their case, where they were lied to when they got a fee statement from the Phillips law firm, and the client said, well, gee, I don't see a credit for my retainer on there, and the respondent said, oh, don't worry about it, it's not a problem. And in fact, he had pocketed the money. So it's important to us, the Bar Association, that this not be viewed as a case such as the Markajohn case, which respondent cites on a number of places in their brief, where we have a lawyer who misappropriated or failed to deposit pension funds of the law firm into the pension account. No clients were involved there. No client ever knew that this happened. It was not a situation where something bad happened to the public.
Have the clients been made whole here?
Excuse me?
Have the clients been made whole here?
They were made whole by Mr. Phillips, initially.
Who either returned funds or provided the service that was contracted
for. That is correct. And then, in turn, the respondent, pursuant to the order and the plea agreement, did make restitution to Mr. Phillips.
All right. What does the Cincinnati Bar think the imposition should be?
We think the Board of Commissioners got it right. It should be an indefinite suspension, period. End of story. And we think they did get it right. In particular, we think the Board of Commissioners got it right on the severity of the mental illness involved here. The word severe was used this morning. In other places in the brief, similar words are used. The reality is that the testimony was that the mental depression condition was mild to moderate. And in our view, the reason that Dr. Kennedy said that the respondent is fit to practice now is because he always was. What he did wasn't caused by a mental condition or disorder. It was not severe enough at any time.
I think I read, he at all times knew the difference between right and wrong, knew he was committing wrong, decided, you know, to maintain a lifestyle that was commensurate with siblings and beyond he and his wife's
means.
That
is correct.
Yet there is the involvement with OLAP and the testimony that that's a necessity and it should be continued. Are you of the opinion that
We certainly think he would benefit from it, and it's not our position that there was no problem. But if you these mental situations are a matter of degree. Another case that the respondent relies on heavily in their brief is the Stidham case, Stidham, in which the court found that the attorney in question's depression was severe, having suicidal thoughts, crying at night. That is described as severe. That case is not this case. Again, we think that the Board of Commissioners properly took into account the medical evidence they had before them. Yes, the Menninger Institute prescribed certain drugs, which can also be prescribed for more severe situations, but they made no finding that, as was pointed out, that he, in fact, was bipolar or psychotic. There's nothing in the record to suggest that sort of severity.
If the respondent had not been subject to a criminal action and had worked this out on a civil basis, and you brought the case from that starting point, he would be out basically the 2 years and then have the chance to apply.
Correct.
does the Bar Association consider the fact that he's been out, what, 2.5 years already at all? That makes it 5.5 years, or is your position that doesn't count at all?
Our position is that in this particular case, it should not count at all. There are cases that have come before this court, or there are situations where the Board of Commissioners has given credit for time served, if you will, mm-hmm. and this court has approved that. We think this is a more serious and severe case of misconduct than those cases. So that's why we would oppose that.
Counsel, the board recommendation does not include the condition of OLAP. It recommends the indefinite suspension with no credit. Are you taking any position on whether we should add a condition?
No, Your Honor. We have not taken a position on that.
Thank you.
One question I had. He was sentenced to 5 years probation by the Court of Common Pleas. Is that correct?
Yes.
And he's still on probation to that court?
To my knowledge, yes. Okay. Yes, definitely.
Thank you.
Thank you. If there are no other questions.
Thank you, Mr. Nikemius. Mr. Haefeli, you've saved almost 4 minutes of your time.
Counsel, is your client still on probation to the Court of Common Pleas?
To my knowledge, yes.
And the medication that you listed in the pleadings here with that your client was originally prescribed, is he still on those medications?
I don't know if he's on all of them. I think he's on some of them. I don't want to tell you now because I don't know what the situation is at the present time. It's been several months since we discussed it.
And the medications, as was stated by the relator, with all medication, it's a degree of prescription. It's how many milligrams or whatever you're prescribed. You're not alleging that he was prescribed maximum dosage of these.
No. One thing about the prescription, though, when he, I believe the record will show, when he left Menninger, they gave him a prescription for Risperdal. So it wasn't that Dr. Kennedy kind of put out, well, that's just something they maybe they tried. Well, they thought it important enough to give him a prescription when he left. I don't think he's still on that. I want to mention one thing about theft from the client or theft from Mr. Phillips. There's a doctrine called judicial admissions when a party or his counsel comes in and makes an admission, it's binding. In the indictment, the victim listed was the John Phillips law firm on every one of the 8 counts. In the grievance complaint in this matter, in every one, the victim is listed as Mr. Phillips. In Mr. Nikemius' opening statement in the hearing, the victim, Mr. Phillips. And in the conclusion to the Bar Association's brief, it begins, in the course of representing seven different clients, respondents stole funds belonging to the Phillips law firm and converted them to his own use. So I don't think we can at this late date sort of switch over and say it's clients. The board talked about taking clients' money, and to be honest with you, I think the board was a little sloppy. I don't think they gathered the difference, and I fault myself for that. I should have pointed it out more strongly.
You disagree with Mr. Nikemius's characterization of some of the ways in which he diverted clients' funds?
I mean, I don't disagree.
Okay. So the record does support the fact
but the thing
that it
is
wasn't that just Phillips Law Firm that lost the funds.
Well, if that's I guess the question is, if you want to get into each case, at what point was that money to go to Phillips Law Firm? And I think in several of the cases, the services have been performed. Others, it was a retainer. The idea that, well, until the work is done, it's still the client's money. I don't think so. I think it's the law firm's money subject to the equitable requirement to give back that which is not earned.
Well,
but
counsel,
we never got into that deeply into the record here.
The money here, compared to some of the other cases where we've seen attorneys inappropriately divert funds, is $10,000 as opposed to hundreds of thousands of dollars. But whether it's the Phillips law firm that has been out $10,000 or whether it's some of the potential clients. I mean, there's still an extensive amount of damage to the reputation of the Phillips Law Firm and to the practice of you know, the profession of law in general.
Certainly.
So to minimize and say, gee, the only victim here is the Phillips Law Firm, and it's only $10,000, and they made it good, and he made it good to the Phillips Law Firm, I think is pretty...
That's not our position.
Well, that's what I'm hearing.
The point, what you've been hearing, I hope, is my peak, if it would be, as it were, to the board, when the stipulations and the indictment and the complaint and the grievance and the statements of counsel all say the victim's the Phillips Law Firm, for them to say, well, he stole from clients, indefinite suspension. There's a shift there. There's a shift between the end of the proceedings and when they came out with their report, which we couldn't do much about except file our objections, which we have. Certainly, he shouldn't have taken the money. And certainly, it's $10,000 is a lot of money. It is mentioned in here also that Phillips also filed a civil lawsuit, and that was settled shortly before the hearing by Mr. Schwederman. The amount is not in the record, but, I won't say anything about it. I think we can imagine now that it's got to be more substantial than what they got already.
What is your client doing now?
Please?
What is your client doing now?
Selling mortgages in a mortgage company without... He's pretty careful about the legal aspects, but his legal knowledge helps him.
So he's able to obtain some employment.
Some employment, but it's not. His wife went back to work, I think, teaching, and I don't know how. That's sort of a part-time thing, too. Not part-time, but not remunerative. It's not like having a certificate and having a full-time job with tenure.
Thank you, Mr. Hakeley. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.